Good morning, Carborough and Chapel Hill. This is John Paul's Truth Quest and Variety Hour, coming to you from WCOM LP, Chapel Hill and Carborough, at 103.5 on the FM dial and webcast worldwide at www.communityradio.coop. I also just recently learned that if you just leave out the www dot, it still takes you to the radio website. We're soon to have a newly revised website. I don't think it's quite open to the public yet, but it's on its way. Some of the great volunteers here at this station, which is an all-volunteer station. No money is paid to anybody. And I am John Paul McClellan, your host for John Paul's Truth Quest and Variety Hour. I have with me here in the studio today my friend Michael Wade. Say hi, Mike.
Hi there.
You're supposed to say hi, Mike.
Hi, Mike.
Didn't I say hi, Mike?
You did. Well,
never mind.
You're a funny guy.
Anyway, I just always, I can't help it. I always make the jokes. I'm always with the jokes. Today we're going to hear, I hope, and I'm pretty sure this time it's going to work, from Kevin Barrett. Kevin Barrett is a scholar and a truth teller. And I'm going to read you a blurb from the website Moochka, which is I'm going to give you the name here. It's a group that's called Muslim Jewish Christian Alliance for 9/11 Truth, and on the website they list all of the people who are involved in the new book that Kevin is putting out. And we're going to talk to Kevin today about that new book and other things. Kevin Barrett, I'm reading from the website now. Kevin Barrett has taught English, French, Arabic, American civilization, humanities, African literature, folklore, and Islam at colleges and universities in San Francisco Bay Area, Paris, Madison, Wisconsin. His PhD dissertation on Moroccan legend compares contemporary legends to classic saints' legends. He is serving as president, and I'm getting a phone call. I'm gonna take this phone call, but you won't hear me talking. I'm gonna see who's calling me. Hold on now. Hello, this is John Paul. Hey Don, I'm on the radio, but I'm glad you called to confirm the Tuesday class. So, all right, see you then. Bye. That's one of my dance students confirming that they're coming to class tonight. This is real live radio right here in Chapel Hill, Carborough, North Carolina. You see, I can't afford to miss those calls because that's my business. So I just take them on the air. And as I was saying, as I was reading, his dissertation was on Moroccan legend compares contemporary legends to classic saints' legends. He is serving as president of Kidria, a nonprofit corporation dedicated to the Islamic socio-environmental awareness, writing and editing for the Muslim magazine Al-Jumoya, and spearheading Mushka.net, the Muslim Jewish Christian Alliance for 9/11 Truth. One of the interesting things that's going on with Kevin today is that he's going to be debating a guy on his radio show that happens at noon on the issues of 9/11. There's a guy who has just very recently apparently written an article about the truthers. This guy's name is Jonathan Kay, and Kay is, according to this email that I got from Kevin, is an intrepid journalist from the Canadian National Post who ventures into the savage jungle where bizarre tribes of 9/11 truthers dwell. Which I think that's kind of funny. Kay is writing a book entitled Among the Truthers, Alternate Theories of 9/11 and the People Who Believe Them. While some expect this book to be deceptive at best and an ad hominem hit piece at worst, his article on a Richard Gage talk in Montreal was actually not so bad by mainstream standards. And I think we should probably emphasize the by mainstream standards part of that. Because most of the people who write about 9/11 truth are really in denial of the truth. And so, you know, it's not at all surprising if we don't get the truth from them. So I'm sitting here now hoping that Kevin will call in. It's now 8 minutes after 11. I thought he was going to call in about 5 minutes after 11. Oh, there he is. I'm going to answer this on the phone, and we'll see who we got. Hello, this is John Paul at John Paul's Truth Quest and Variety Hour.
Hey, John Paul. Hi, Kevin Barrett calling in. How are you?
Wow, Kevin, I'm so glad to hear from you. I was sitting here kind of chewing my nails, wondering.
Sorry about that. You know, I use these long-distance cards, and sometimes they don't work right away. It's weird. But anyway, we should be good to go for actually 35 minutes now.
Well, I appreciate it, Kevin. I have with me in the studio a guy from the local area named Mike Wade. Say hi, Mike.
Hi there, Kevin.
Once again, you didn't say hi, Mike. You said hi, Kevin. I don't know. You give people instructions, and they just don't seem to be able to follow them. What can I say?
Hi, Mike.
Yeah.
Hi, Kevin. I may have met you once before. Were you at the Chicago convention a couple of years ago for 9/11?
Yeah, I was. I was actually one of the organizers.
Right, yeah. I think I might have shook your hand at one point. But
yeah, in fact, I think that's really where we all met, isn't it?
Yeah, that's where I met.
Because, you know, I was the guy who jumped in kind of at the last minute to work on the AV stuff. And we had a lot.
You saved the day, as I recall.
Well, I don't know if it was just me. I think it was everybody who jumped in, including Mike from Denver. And of course, Dan from up in Chicago jumped in. He was an engineer at one of the local access TV stations up there, and several other people. A guy from Las Vegas who works the shows out there, named Di Giuseppe or something like that, was really a fabulous help. Really knew what he was doing. But I do take a little credit for it. I worked my butt off, so for that part, I do take credit.
Kevin, I wanted to ask you a question. Do you know if there's going to be any more national conferences like that? I would like to go to one personally, and because there's not too many things like that around this area. But have you heard about
it? I would too. Yeah, I think there probably will be. I know Gabriel Day, who's one of the best organizers of these things, has talked about organizing one for a while. He was looking at next October, and I think that might be on the back burner now. But you know, people are always, you know, scheming and stuff. You know, my feeling is to get a good turnout and really make it feel like a step forward, it would be really helpful to find, you know, a way of kind of guaranteeing a big turnout, preferably with some kind of celebrity. You know, we just need to get like a couple of celebrities willing to, you know, take the risk, and I think we could, you know, we could get a great turnout and actually do something that hasn't been done before.
Yeah, you mean you mean a celebrity that is outside or at least outside and inside the 9/11 truth movement.
Like Martin Sheen or...
Sure, yeah. You know, Willie Nelson could play a show. You know, especially a performer who could put on a performance. That would draw a bunch of people to the performance who otherwise might not go to a 9/11 truth conference.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's such a clearly a good way to go if you're going to do something and you want to get a big audience. That's right. Of course, it takes a lot of money to get somebody like that to come to do a show.
Well, that's true, but you know, maybe, you know, people like Willie or, you know, who knows, maybe some celebrity will step forward with some patriotism and do the right thing and you know, be willing to forego their big money since they can make big money elsewhere.
Well, again, I agree with that, and I think we should all start putting out a call for such a an action by a big star of some kind. You might want to even mention that on your show today when you talk with Jonathan Kay.
Well, that's a good idea. I mean, you never know.
I'll mention
whether
it
there
here.
Might be a, Yeah, I've probably got a bunch of celebrities listening to my show, and I don't even know it.
I'm sure you do. I can only hope that I have some listening to my show.
But, well, if there are any, hey guys, you heard what we said. Come on, step forward, do something good for your country.
Yeah, I actually know a few really famous people, and, you know, it just occurred to me, I've never asked them to do such a thing. I should do that. I think I will do that, in fact, very next thing. So everybody out there listening, volunteer, if you're a big star, volunteer to do a performance at a national conference for the 9/11 Truth Movement and help us spread the truth to the world. And, of course, the rest of the world knows a lot more about this than the U.S. public does, doesn't it, Kevin?
Well, yeah, I think so. You know, probably at least half the people of the world think or suspect 9/11 was an inside job. Polls show that it's probably over three quarters of Muslims, so that's over a billion people right there. And then, you know, the formerly colonized countries, which are still economically colonized and militarily with these base, U.S. bases all over the world, the people in these countries realize what they're up against with this evil empire. And so they, when they see something like 9/11, they're pretty much instantly skeptical. Well, yeah. Americans here at home, we've been brainwashed to think that, you know, we're the good guys, and you know, it's hard to imagine this kind of stuff happening here.
Well, and in fact, anyone who really looks carefully at the history of the United States will soon be disabused of that idea that the U.S. is the pure good guy in the world, both contemporaneously and historically. As you point out in your upcoming book, I noticed you had several sections that talk about the history of the United States and all the false flag operations and exploitations of things that, you know, they use, I guess, illicitly, should I say, to make wars happen and to make other things happen.
You know, my book is actually, it gives you a kind of a quick overview of some of the most, outrageous and most obvious false flag events, some of which have been used to start wars. But it's not really meant to be comprehensive. You know, Barry Zwicker is at work on a comprehensive book about false flag events throughout history. And when that comes out, it's really going to be great. You know, my book is more of an attempt to intervene in the political situation right now by getting this this message into the hands of the people who voted for Obama subliminally, because they are really very skeptical about the war on terror. And, you know, Obama said he's going to close Guantanamo and torture. You know, he's a peace candidate, was against the Iraq war from the beginning. And so that's why people voted for him. Plus, he's got a funny name that sounds like Osama. Middle name is Hussein. Yeah. You know, voting for this guy was a message. It meant end the war on terror, but it was all subliminal. And we need to help that knowledge rise into full consciousness among the Obama voters we know. So my book, which is called Questioning the War on Terror, a primer for Obama voters, is really designed for people like you and me and others who actually have a better grasp on what's actually going on, to hand it out, you know, turn it over to your nearest Obama voter and say, hey, take a look at this. And it starts out easy. It's not, you know, 9/11 truth in your face right at the beginning. It's more, you know, starting with questions like, you know, what's the point of this? You know, even with 9/11, the number of terror deaths over the past century is really pretty minuscule. You know, it's a, you know, on 9/11 we lost 2 days worth of automobile fatalities, 29 days worth of highway of rather of wait a minute, was it two days worth of smoking fatalities, 29 days worth of highway deaths, etc. It yeah. Really was not, it's not a statistically significant threat. You're more likely to be struck by lightning or drown in your bathtub. So what's the hoopla over this war on terror anyway?
Indeed.
And you start with that question, and then, you know, from there the whole thing just really falls apart.
Well, in fact, along those lines, it's just so obvious to me anyway, and maybe I'm just stupid, but it seems obvious to me that there's never been a terrorist threat that was actually an existential threat to the United States or to any other country for that matter. What is a terrorist attack going to do to actually bring down an entire country or government? It's ridiculous to assume that terrorism is an existential threat to the United States.
Well, John Paul, I think, you know, there are two ways to look at this, and one is that the kind of terrorism that we hear about in the media is clearly not remotely an existential threat. That is the non-state actors, you know, Al-Qaeda, quote-unquote, these people who are not part of an intelligence agency or a government. But militaries and intelligence agencies actually do pose an existential terrorist threat to everybody. And, you know, as my book points out, you know, if you define terrorism as violence against civilians for political purposes, the only terrorists that matter are governments.
And
you know,
we in the U.S. are the largest perpetrators of violence in the history of the world.
Indeed. And then, you know, when you talk about the question of existential threats, well, the nuclear weapons that governments have stockpiled are the biggest, most obvious existential threat. Biological weapons are another possible existential threat. And I think the real one of the things that the policymakers are actually worried about with so-called terrorism is it's not Al-Qaeda, you know, it's not the Palestinians, it's not the, you know, Irish trying to chase out the British or the Basques trying to chase out the Spanish. What they're really worried about, although they're worried about that stuff because that's a threat to empire, but what they're, you know, they're also, I think, genuinely concerned about the possibility that state actors, that is intelligence agencies and militaries, might be able to go in and, you know, set off suitcase nukes in the hundred biggest American cities all at once. And that would be it. That would, you know, so likewise, the same thing could happen to China. It could happen to Russia. Any government, any of these major governments conceivably could do this with the advances in destructive technology. You know, nuclear weapons apparently now can be compressed down to very small sizes and can be pretty undetectable. Biological weapons can be made quite pernicious. So we're on a real roller coaster ride towards catastrophe, and I think that the policymakers do understand that. And part of the reason that they set up this war on terror is maybe as a sort of demonstration effect that we're the biggest evil people on the block. Don't mess with us. We're gonna take over the world and make sure nobody else has the capacity to have any military power. And from a certain perspective, you can see why they would do that. But from another perspective, you can see that this is just going to keep the problem going. What we really need to do is understand that war is obsolete in an age of these kinds of weapons. And I think the human species is on the point of realizing that. We haven't had a world war now for quite some time. And I think, you know, it's really a possibility that people waking up to what really happened on 9/11 and other big false flag events could be a big part of ending war on this planet.
Well, that seems obvious to me. And I've been saying for some time, 9/11 is the key to understanding the true nature of our government. And until people get that, I think we're going to keep going in the same really bad direction that we're headed now.
Oh, touche.
Yeah. Kevin, one of the things that I was hoping to do in this conversation was get from you at least one thing that you think is the most important thing that people should be hearing right now.
Well, boy, that's a kind of a tough one, but I would say
I know today, it is.
by right now, meaning like right now, you know, Tuesday at 10:20 a.m. On what, July 23rd, I think a really important thing to check out is this Torture Accountability Action Day that's coming up on June 25th. Now, this is not really a 9/11 truth movement organized action, but the thing is that if this torture scandal blows up, it will reveal what happened on 9/11. And the reason for that is that this torture was instituted in order to produce false confessions.
Yes, yes.
From patsies, 9/11 patsies. They tortured KSM, was it something like 160 times a month? Or he was 183 times in 1 month he was waterboarded, among other
forms
of torture.
Something like that. Yeah, it was a huge amount.
Right. And the only reason to torture people like that is to produce false confessions for propaganda purposes, as I think it was Senator Carl Levin pointed out. This whole torture program is really it's a distraction in a sense that all the torture that's going on all over the place was really kind of a smokescreen for the most important torture and the reason that the whole torture program was instituted, which is to produce those false confessions that they got from KSM, which became virtually the only references in the 9/11 Commission report that backing up their story of the 19 hijackers with box cutters led by a guy on dialysis in a cave in Afghanistan. So these, you know, and it wasn't the confessions themselves that were cited in the 9/11 Commission report. It was actually secondhand reports about what KSM said under torture, reports that were passed to the 9/11 Commission by his torturers, who are war criminals, whose word would not stand up in any court in the land. Those torturers, I wouldn't be surprised if the people who tortured KSM might very well be the same people who were directly involved in 9/11, say planting the nanothermite in the World Trade Center. Naturally, these people would be motivated to do what it would take to set up a patsy so they wouldn't be caught.
Yeah.
And guess what? Those CIA torturing war criminals who tortured false confessions for propaganda purposes out of KSM to use in the 9/11 Commission report, those same war criminals went and destroyed all evidence of those interrogations. They destroyed the tapes, they destroyed the notes, they destroyed everything.
Yes.
And Robert Baer, the former top CIA officer on the ground in the Middle East, has said that this is completely outrageous. They destroyed all the evidence showing who was really behind 9/11. And he was quoted in, I think it was Time magazine, saying the conspiracy theorists are going to have a field day with this. And guess what? A few months later, he's joined us as a conspiracy theorist. He actually said that, you know, when asked about 9/11 being an inside job, he said, quote, the evidence points to it.
Yeah, I was just reading some stuff by him just recently on the web where he goes into all of that. And, yeah, he certainly has swung in a completely different direction than he used to.
He's not stupid.
No. A lot of people who are out there denying 9/11 truth are not stupid. They're just corrupt. I don't necessarily think that Baer was corrupt, although he kind of says himself that he was doing things that were corrupt. But apparently he's repenting and has come up with some truth, you know, that I think people can pretty much believe, given who he is, you know, and what his background is.
Well, I think his outlook probably would be, you know, I think he's, you know, to be a top operational on the ground CIA officer in the Middle East, I mean, you have to be willing to do things that probably, you know, you and I would consider corrupt. But he would say, or in the service of his country or the empire, whatever you want to call it, you know, he would justify many of the things that he's done. But people like Bob Baer, I think, often have enough of an ingrained sense of patriotism that even though they're willing to kill and lie for empire, they look at what happened on 9/11, and that is just so far over the top.
Yeah.
And it's not even necessarily all that helpful for the country or the empire in any way, that they're going to, you know, join our side, which is one of the nice things about 9/11 truth. We get a lot of patriots on board along with the usual critics of the government.
Indeed. This is John Paul's Truth Quest and Variety Hour on WCOMLP Chapel Hill and Carrboro. And I'm speaking with Kevin Barrett, who is the editor, should I say you're editor or author of this upcoming book?
I'm the author.
You're the author of the upcoming book. And what's the name of the book again, Kevin?
It's called Questioning the War on Terror, A Primer for Obama Voters. And
All
you
right.
can find information about it at truthjihad.com.
And you're going to be on the radio today, I guess, debating Jonathan Kay. And I'm kind of interested in your foreshadowing of what that's going to be like. What are the subjects that are going to be covered? What do you expect from that?
Well, I'm interested in where he's coming from, and so I'll be asking him, how did he get onto this project and so on.
Yeah.
I think, you know, I have mixed feelings about him, as do other people in the 9/11 truth movement. I've had a bunch of people emailing me, you know, that just absolutely hate him and totally think he's, you know, he's an evil spook. And I've had others who actually think that there's hope for him and that he's honest but misguided and, you know, possibly open to learning something. I don't know, but I think that his project of investigating the 9/11 truth movement based on the fact that it's an important social phenomenon is fine as far as it goes. But then if he tries to do it without even engaging with the evidence that is the basis of the whole 9/11 truth movement, I think there's a problem there. And
yeah,
if he launches ad hominem attacks on us, there's even more of a problem.
Well, and I trust that you will point out some of the more glaring pieces of evidence when you
I think at some point we'll have to discuss some of it, yes. I don't think you can talk about 9/11 truth without talking about the evidence that's the core of the whole movement.
Well, I agree with that. Did you want to say something, Mike?
Well, I was curious. I may have missed it earlier, but is your book out yet, or is it coming out soon?
Well, it should be in print any day now. It's supposed to be shipped before the end of the week.
Okay.
So next couple days.
Will it be available on Amazon, or where could I get it?
It will be available on Amazon in another week or two, apparently. Mm-hmm. For now, people can get it by finding the publisher website, which is catterpress.blogspot.com. But to find that, you might want to just go to truthjihad.com. And it's at the bottom of the press release, there's a link to the publisher, and you can just order it through there.
How about Barry Zwicker's book? Do you know if it's out yet?
No, it's definitely not out. It's turning into a long-term project. It will be good when it does finally come out, is all of Barry's work. Yes, I think we're looking at another year probably for that.
This is the same fellow from Canada that did the media study?
That's right, yeah. He wrote Towers of Deception,
right,
the media cover-up of 9/11.
Right. Yeah. I hear, speaking of bin Laden, I hear David Ray Griffin's newest book is on bin Laden. I think it's David Ray, right?
And it is. It's a great book, as are all of David's books. This one's pretty succinct. It's short and sweet. And, you know, anybody who has a couple of hours on their hands to read it is going to realize that the whole story we've been given about bin Laden, especially all of these ridiculous bogus bin Laden tapes, is a crock.
Yeah, Kevin, can you just give us a quick rundown of who David Griffith is?
Yeah, I call him the Dean of 9/11 Studies.
Yeah.
He's a retired professor of philosophy and theology at Claremont College in California. He retired just in time to take up 9/11 Truth. He was going to write a magazine article for Harper's, I think, on the subject, raising questions about the official story back in late 2003, and he quickly saw that it was a very important subject, needed a book devoted to it. He wrote a book called The New Pearl Harbor, which became kind of the first real, you know, all-inclusive 9/11 truth book, one that we keep referring back to even today. And since then, he's produced, I believe, a total of seven now books about 9/11. And they're all very well-reasoned, lucid, fair-minded. It's really an amazing body of work. I think he'll go down in history quite prominently for it.
His latest book, right before the bin Laden book, is an update of that book, Pearl Harbor.
That's right, yeah, the New Pearl Harbor Revisited.
Yeah.
And what's amazing is the stuff in the New Pearl Harbor, which seemed so, you know, so questionable at the time, you know, was the Pentagon really not hit by a 757, you know, was the World Trade Center really blown up with explosives? You know, this stuff was pretty edgy in 2004, but, you know, almost everything in that original New Pearl Harbor book still stands, with only some very minor modifications. So he really got it right the first time.
You know, it was always really amazing to me that the questions about whether the Pentagon got hit with a 757, it was just amazing to me that there was any controversy about it. I mean, it seemed so obvious to me from the very beginning that it couldn't possibly have happened. I mean, the day of 9/11, I was getting up out of bed kind of late in the morning. The TV was on in the living room. I no longer have TV at my house, but back then I did. And on the screen was a picture of the smoking hole in the World Trade Center. And from that point, I watched, and I was watching live when the second plane flew into the other tower. And I was watching live when the network media showed the towers coming down. And my wife and I were later talking about it, watching the replays. And this was, you know, within a couple of hours of it happening. And we were then arguing about whether the Bush administration had let this happen or had planned it themselves. because I was watching on the TV before any of the spin started, and I'm seeing the towers blow up. You know, I'm seeing a symmetrical wave of destruction from near the top of the building go all the way down in perfect symmetry, blowing things out of the building. And I'm saying, well, those are explosions. This thing is being blown to bits. You know, it's ridiculous to think that a building that is damaged so asymmetrically is going to collapse symmetrically. It just doesn't make sense. And by the way, I've done a lot of building myself. I've built a lot of structures myself. So I kind of understand how things are put together, you know, and what structural stuff is like. And I'm looking at that and I'm saying, you know, that stuff is being blown to bits. And then when I saw Building 7 come down, and my whole life, I've always loved controlled demolition. I'm like a kid, you know. It's like every time I get to see a video of a building being demolished, I just have always loved it because I thought it was so cool. And I'm watching Building 7 come down, and I'm saying, well, that's a controlled demolition. It can't be anything else. No possibility that a building would come down like that when asymmetrically damaged. Okay? So I've always thought from the very beginning, you know, we don't need no stinking scientific reports, okay? Just open your eyes and look at what's right there in front of your face, and you see that these buildings were brought down with explosives. Period. End of story.
Well, I have to agree with you, although I didn't figure it out as quickly as you did, maybe because I haven't really built that much. It took me a couple of years, but once I actually took a hard look at it, and on 9/11 itself, I didn't sit there, you know, staring at these things over and over. I don't watch much TV. I just have this feeling it's a big brainwashing thing anyway. So
it is.
I didn't really sit there and stare at it like so many people did, and I didn't pay close enough attention to notice what you noticed. But then a couple of years later, when I heard that David Griffin was writing this book and saying this, then I went back and, you know, pulled up this footage on the internet and watched it and said, holy crap. I mean, this, you know, yes, I agree. It's obvious. And, you know, what I found was, you know, I would do teach-ins back in 2004 in the middle of University of Wisconsin-Madison campus, and these engineering professors would come up to me and argue with me and say things like, well, the plane just melted all the steel the minute it hit the building, and so of course it just collapsed. Or they would say, oh, the plane knocked it over. It was the impact of the plane that caused it to crumble and collapse, and it collapsed immediately when the plane hit it. And they would say these ridiculous things that showed they didn't know the first thing about it.
And these are
and
engineering.
And then I would argue with them, and I'd say, yeah, you're just a humanities guy. What do you know?
Kevin, yeah. I had a question. I think the buildings in New York were pretty obvious to anybody that, you know, checks it out.
But okay, you know, I can only be on here for another couple of minutes, so this is going to be pretty quick.
Okay. Yeah, I just wondered if you had a really quick scenario of how the Pentagon happened. There seems to be so many contradictory things. There are even 9/11 truthers who insist that it was hit by a plane. But a lot of people say that the actual plane came in at a 90-degree angle rather than a 45-degree angle where the damage was. I wondered if you'd heard any of the latest things that convinced you of a particular scenario.
Well, you know, I think more and more people are coming around to what Terry Mason thought was obvious right at the beginning, which is it certainly was not hit by a passenger airliner. There are, you know, there have been a few 9/11 truth people who've tried to argue that it might have been. They've never argued that it was, just that it could have been. People like Jim Hoffman. I think that position has been more and more undermined as time has gone by, and at this point, the evidence would be, you know, for either a flyover with a timed explosion or possibly a flyover with a missile hit and a timed explosion. It's the most plausible hypothesis. Of course, we don't know for sure, but if you add everything up, including the fact that the eyewitness testimony is of a completely different flight path that looks like a flyover, the black box, such as it is, shows a flyover, and so on and so forth. I think the work at Pilots for 9/11 Truth and the Pentagon.com has been pretty convincing.
Yeah, I highly recommend anybody going to pilotsfor911truth.org to see what they have to say. We're talking about hundreds of pilots who have thousands and thousands of hours of flying experience, some who train other pilots. This is a site where they expound on the facts that, as they know them for 9/11 Truth, and they come up with completely different conclusions about what happened at the Pentagon than does the 9/11 Commission report, which, by the way, is just a pack of lies. And so people should go look at that. Now, Kevin, give us your website again very slowly so everybody can write it down, because I want them to read your book.
Well, thanks. I do, too. It's truthjihad.com. That's truth, T-R-U-T-H, jihad, J-I-H-A-D, .com. And then, as I said, if you want to buy the book, you can just go to the publisher website, and if you ask for an autographed copy, I'll be happy to do that. And then it should be available on Amazon within a couple of weeks.
Excellent. And I hope I can get you to call back again someday before too much longer and talk with us some more when you have even more time. I know that's going to be hard since your show always runs right after mine. But at least maybe we can make another effort to have a conversation of this length.
Sounds good. Yeah, we could maybe even make a habit of it at some point. So, yeah, people do want to hear my show with Jonathan Kay, the guy who's writing a book about the 9/11 truth movement from a skeptical perspective, or should I say a non-skeptical perspective.
Yeah.
That's going to be on noliesradio.org at the top of the hour.
Great. And the last thing I want to say before you leave is that in my opinion, the most ridiculous conspiracy theory that has ever been offered to the general public is the one that we see in the 9/11 Commission report. It is so absurd and so full of holes that you got to be basically brain dead to believe it.
Especially since we know it's all based on non-evidence, allegedly obtained from a guy who was tortured out of his mind.
That's right, and also considering that a considerable amount of stuff was just completely left out, like the testimony of Willie Rodriguez, for instance.
Right, and I did want to say also that there is that big torture protest day coming up Thursday, and people can get the details by going to my website, truthjihad.com, and then click on Kevin's blog. And you'll get to my blog, and today's entry gives you all of the ways to get involved with that protest of torture on Thursday.
Now, for those of us who are probably going to miss your show today, we can go to truthjihad.com and still get a MP3 of it or something, right?
That's right. You can get to the free listen-on-demand archives just by clicking on my radio page link. Go to the radio page, and at the top of the radio page, all of those free on-demand archives are linked.
Now, have you had any success at trying to get on the air with some of these so-called progressive talk shows like Stephanie Miller, Ed Schultz,
Amy Goodman?
No, none of the above. I have been on Air America a whole lot here in Madison, Wisconsin, but then the guy that was bringing me on got fired. So Lee Rayburn, who's a really good guy.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Well, he probably got fired for having you on.
Maybe that was it, yeah. Listen, I got to get going, though, because my phone card is just about to expire.
Well, thanks a lot, Kevin.
Okay, thanks,
John. Thanks, Kevin.
Thanks, Mike.
I look forward to talking
later
with you again soon.
Sounds good.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Well, all right, ladies and gentlemen, that was Kevin Barrett with truthjihad.com, and I think it was great to have him on the air and have him give his perspective on what's going on and get a little bit of information about the book that's coming out. And I hope everybody that can will go online immediately after this show and listen to his show. Just go to truthjihad.com and you can get a link to the show webcast live at that URL. So hopefully all you folks that are listening, both of you, will go to that site, and because I know, you know, one of my cousins is listening, and I think somebody I know in Bombay or Bangalore is listening. Other than that, I'm not sure who's listening, but you know, we just keep it going because I don't know what else to do. All right, trying to talk about the truth and spread it out there so that other people will start getting hip to it. I participate in several website discussion groups, forums, and on those forums I post information about this and other topics that would otherwise go completely unnoticed by most of the people who read those and participate in those discussion groups, because most of them are completely brainwashed by the mainstream media, and of course they don't realize it. So I don't blame them too much, because I understand that once you get caught up in that mainstream media gestalt, it's really, really hard to break away from it. And when you say something to people like that, that is so far out of the mainstream of what they're used to hearing, they just think you're a nut and tune you out. And, of course, a lot of times I get a really severe ad hominem personal attacks by other people on those lists. And I try to control my anger and not say anything too nasty. Usually what I do is I excoriate what they've said and not them personally. But actually, I'm beginning to learn that that doesn't work too well either. So I try to hold back and just recite the facts as they are brought in scientifically. And you can find those scientific facts on the web. One of the newest ones, which Kevin made reference to, was the nanothermite, and that comes about because of a scientific paper that was published in the Open Chemical Physics Journal, which is an internationally renowned scientific journal. It's a peer-reviewed journal. You can't get published in that without this huge scrutiny from extremely accomplished and credentialed scientists who read it and make sure that every T is crossed and every I is dotted before they let such a paper onto the journal. And this one was written by a group of 9 scientists, headed up by a guy named Niels Harris, who is a professor in Copenhagen. And this subject matter is within his field of study, in which he says with absolute certainty that nanothermite was found in the dust, the debris of the World Trade Center destruction. They took samples starting something like within less than an hour of the demolition and continued to collect samples for, I think, a couple of weeks. And they got samples from all over the place. And he sent them to independent labs, as well as doing a whole series of experiments with him himself to find out what was in the dust. And he found in the dust unreacted particles of nanothermite. Nanothermite is only available through the U.S. government. There is no commercial group, no commercial company, no commercial venture that produces nanothermite. You can only get it if you have a connection to the U.S. government. They control all the labs that produce it. In fact, it's unlikely that there's more than one or two labs that do produce it, and they are in complete control of those labs.
Did they make it clear in this report, John, that it couldn't possibly be anything else, you know, as a result of the materials blowing up in that building, that it had to be
they made it absolutely clear that this particular combination of nanoparticles of the substances that go into making thermite could not possibly be produced by the demolition of the buildings or by the collapse of the buildings or whatever you want to call the buildings coming down. These substances cannot be produced by that process. The only way they can be produced is in a laboratory under extremely controlled conditions, because that's the only way you can make them combine properly into the incendiary and explosive substance that is called nanothermite. So anybody who thinks that it can be a result of the buildings coming down, it just needs to do a little bit more research and get at the facts.
I think one of the things that they found out about nanothermite also is that not only does it heat to high temperatures for purposes of cutting, as in cutting the steel on the I-beams, but when it's put in that form, it's also highly explosive.
It is, and it produces pressures in pounds per square inch in the millions of pounds per square inch. When it is made that way and fashioned into what is called shaped charges, the way the shaped charge is built is that it is built with an opening on one side that is where the power of the explosion and the burning come out in extreme concentration. So with this method, you end up with explosive power that is really far beyond what is normal for even controlled demolition.
And for people who think you would have had to have rigged thousands of pounds of this stuff, it a very small amount can be very powerful. It's extremely
powerful. Well, now,
powerful.
In the scientific paper that was published in the Open Chemical Physics Journal, they claim that they have estimated through extrapolation how many pounds of this substance had to be used, and there was a lot of it. Given the concentration of it in the dust, they were able to extrapolate how many pounds of it, or at least a range of how much of it was used.
Do you remember how much?
It comes anywhere. It's in the tons.
Yeah.
It's 10 tons. It could even be more than 10 tons, they said. And the way that this would have been done was in the several instances where the whole building or portions of the building had been shut down in the weeks and months prior to 9/11.
Even years, I heard.
Even years ago, they were shutting the building down and not telling people really what they were doing. They claimed that they were security reasons for shutting the building down. And in fact, within 2 weeks prior to the actual 9/11 events, the entire towers were completely shut down. No one was allowed in or out, and they had workmen in there for, I think, an entire weekend doing what was called upgrades of security and elevators. Well, guess what? The elevators are the access points to the 47 massive steel columns on the interior of the building that supported somewhere around 40% of the structure. The outside columns, which are 126 or so columns around the outside of the building, were more easily available, and not as many of those would have to be detonation placed on them to make them come down. And in some of the photographs and videos, you can see what, for all purposes, looks like molten aluminum dripping from the corners of the building, which would have had to have been done in order to bring the buildings down with thermite. So you've got ample evidence, really, that the buildings were blown to smithereens by controlled demolition. In the case of the towers, they were exploded. In the case of Building 7, they were imploded. But they were most certainly, even to the naked eye, it is so obvious and quite self-evident that the buildings were taken down with explosives. So that's the conclusion that I reach. That's the conclusion that many, many scientists have reached. And anybody who wants to watch the videos and put away the propaganda that they've heard on national media and just suspend all that and just watch the doggone videos, I think you can see for your own self what really happened.
Yeah.
And, while I'm glad that we have scientific evidence that backs up what I think is obvious, I don't really need it. The day it happened, I think it was clearly obvious that the buildings were blown up and that Building 7 was demolished with controlled demolition.
And for those still skeptical, in addition to a special website by pilots for 9/11 Truth, there's also one that I think is only about a year old, Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth.
Richard Gage.
Yeah, and yeah. Lots, and I don't know any numbers, but more and more people are coming on every day saying that in their professional opinion this was a controlled demolition, and a lot of them said that they were afraid to in the first years after the incident because, they were worried about their professional standing and all that stuff.
And they had plenty of reason to worry because almost everyone who said anything at all about it in support of the truth has lost their job.
Yeah.
I mean, there's just dozens and dozens of people that you can look at who have been fired or pushed out of their position because they dared to speak the truth about what happened on 9/11. So, you know, it's up to the people of the United States to learn the truth and to act on it. And the way you act on it is you've got to elect people to office who are willing to speak the truth. Right now in Congress, in the entire Congress, in both the Senate and the House, we have maybe two or three people who are actually willing to speak the truth and who actually represent the people that elected them. At the top of that list, in my opinion, is Dennis Kucinich. He's the only member of the government who I can say, with from the knowledge that I have, and I could be missing something, but he's the only one that has consistently, during his entire career, truthfully, honestly represented the people that elected him. And if you want somebody to run the country in a true way of justice and peace and truth, that's the guy.
He's pretty progressive on most issues, but I'm not aware that he's said much about 9/11. Am I wrong about that?
He has been very careful about speaking out about 9/11 because he knows that the media machine will just devastate him if he says anything too truthful about it. But he has called for a new investigation.
Right.
And he has, in fact, said that he's going to hold hearings about the financial aspects behind what happened on 9/11 to get to the bottom of who made all the money on the options that were bought on all the companies that were the major companies that suffered from 9/11, the airline industry, the insurance industry. There were extremely anomalous purchases of options that bet on these companies' stocks falling to rock bottom, that were some of which were exercised. Some of them weren't even exercised because I think the people got cold feet and they realized that they would be seen, you know, as for what they really are. Now, that information is secret. We have not been given the information of who it was that bought those options and who profited on them. I guarantee you, if we ever find out who it is, it's going to be some of the people who were in a position to make 9/11 happen. And I believe you'll see that those are the people who benefited financially from 9/11 in the hundreds of millions of dollars.
Speaking of Dennis Kucinich, he is our connection in Congress for the reform movement currently going on around the monetary system and banking. And he is sponsoring, I don't know whether he's actually come out with it yet, but it's called the American Monetary Act, which was crafted by the American Monetary Institute. And their website is quite interesting. You should check
that
out.
What is their website? You can just Google
it.
What is it again?
American Monetary Institute.
Okay.
I'm going to be going to their national conference in September.
Well, that sounds like a good site to look at.
The basis of this act is to nationalize the Federal Reserve.
Yeah.
Return the creation of money back to the government away from banks.
Which is what the Constitution says,
yes,
in
right.
the first place. Although I do have to say that, given that the Constitution empowers the Congress to produce money, I think they can constitutionally say, well, we'll create this organization here to do that. However, that doesn't make it a good thing.
Right.
You know, and I don't believe that the creation of the Federal Reserve was a good thing in the first place. It was clearly corrupt, and it was clearly done for the interests of the moneyed elites who met in Jekyll Island in 1913 in order to fabricate the Federal Reserve.
Well, over $400 billion of our tax dollars go every year just to pay the interest back to these folks.
I've got a call coming in here, Mike. Let me see who it is. I'm going to answer it on the air. Hello, this is John Paul with John.
Every year just to pay the interest back to
You need to turn down your radio.
Hey, John Paul, Chuck.
Yeah, turn down your radio.
I just did.
Okay. I've got about 2 minutes, Chuck.
Yep. Well, maybe I don't need to say this. I'm looking forward to an archive. I'd like to send out what I heard today to other people.
Well, I'm going to be archiving it. It's being recorded right now, and unless I screwed up, which sometimes I do, I will have a recording of it up on the website by the end of the day today.
Fantastic.
So I appreciate you calling in, Chuck.
How about I'll call you next week or something like that, and I'll call you personally on later today.
All right, great.
Okay.
Thanks.
Keep it up.
Righto.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye.
Is that your buddy?
That's one of the guys that we both know that's local, has been involved in the 9/11 truth movement, and has helped bring in speakers such as Robert Bowman, Colonel Robert Bowman, who ran for president and also ran for Congress down in Florida.
What's Chuck's last name?
Knowles.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you know Chuck. He's a friend of Peter's.
Okay, right.
I'm anxious to have more people call in. I'm glad Chuck called in. I really would like to get more people to call in, even if you don't agree with me. And believe me, if you call in, I will let you speak. Even if you don't agree with me, I won't interrupt you. I mean, I'm not going to let you run on forever and ever. But I would love for people to call in who have a different point of view to explain why they believe that. And then I will say what I think about what's being said by any caller. But I won't call you names. I will brutally criticize what is said. But it won't be a personal attack. It'll be a brutal criticism of what is said. Some people can't take that, and I think that's probably why a lot of people don't call in. But, hey, give me a shout, and let's see what's going on. Next week, I may have Webster Tarpley on. I've been after him. He said he will call in and talk with me on the air. So far, it hasn't happened, but I think next week is a chance that it will happen. I'm going to try to get him to agree to that this week. He also has a new book coming out, and he's done a lot of, his book is out. And he's been a rabble-rouser for a long time and speaks the truth as almost no one else does. And it's, by the way, not very flattering to Barack Obama. And we got about 30 seconds left on the air.
Yeah, and I'd like to say that John has promised me to do a whole show on monetary and banking reform.
And we are going to do that.
And that'll be sometime in the near future, and I'll try to let you know ahead of time, and talk about banking and monetary reform.
In the near future. We should be able to do that within the next few weeks, I would think.
Yeah.
Okay, so I look forward to that. I want to thank everybody who is listening for listening. And as I always say at the end of my show, people, seek the truth.